Dr. Stephen Cook, been on the program a few times. He is professor of environmental science and biology at Carleton University. Stephen and his team from the Cook Lab conduct some pretty interesting research on one of my favorite species for sure, and other fish as well, bass. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Morning, Angelo.
How you doing, man?
Oh, it's great. Love the rain, you know. Ice fishing maybe in 2 months. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, we laugh, but it does kind of open up waterways that normally would be ice fishing only that do have an open season. I'm thinking more in terms like Bay of Quinte, for example. It's got to be happening down there. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I think we need to get used to this idea that we've got ice cover from December through March and in many areas of Ontario. We're going to have ice cover, but it's going to come and go. So I think in the future, we're going to need to change how we fish to be able to to access fish year-round.
Now, I know you're an avid angler in the open water season. Do you ice fish?
A little bit. Around Ottawa, it's darn cold here. So I got some little kiddos, too, just getting to the age where the idea of having them stand around on the ice with me is a possibility. So the plan was to do it this month, but the weather gods have not cooperated as of yet.
All right, Stephen, for those folks who maybe are not regular listeners to the program, tell them what the Cook Lab is and what you do.
Sure. We study freshwater and marine fish. We do so across Canada and around the world. And we really focus on trying to develop solutions to problems. So, for example, how do we get fish past dams? How do we make sure that fish that are caught and released survive? What are the best land use planning decisions to make sure that we've got healthy and productive freshwater ecosystems? So those are some of the questions that we try and address or tackle.
Is the Cook Lab a private enterprise, or is it a government-funded operation? Like, how does that work?
Right, so we're part of Carleton University, so it's a public university. I'm a provincial employee functionally, but all the folks that work in the lab, which are largely students and postdocs, so they're learners or trainees, they're learning from the process, and we go out and get funding from government, from different NGOs, from industry to do research, and then we share it publicly and also engage in other things. Yesterday, I was downtown at Fisheries Notions Canada headquarters talking about environmental evidence. So we get involved both, we do things certainly in the classroom, but we do a lot of things outside the classroom as well.
Nice. Excellent. Now, I read an interesting article of yours recently about fish under ice, because it's one of those fascinating subjects, right? Like, what happens once it freezes? What do those fish do? Very seldom do any of us have real insight on that. But I read an interesting article of yours that kind of shed a bit of light. Tell us about the challenges that fish like bass, for example, face during the winter period.
Right. So obviously it gets cold. And for a fish, water temperature means everything. So we call water temperature the master factor. It influences everything from what goes on at the level of the cell to how long it takes a fish to digest, how fast they can swim. And so you can see that would affect their ability to grow, their ability to either eat or avoid predators. So it's really, really important. And water temperature is not the only thing. In some instances, we see really low dissolved oxygen levels in winter. Now, that may seem counterintuitive because we're always telling anglers to, hey, really pay attention to your live well at those really warm temperatures because fish suck up oxygen really quickly. In the winter, it's a little bit different. It's not the fish usually that are the ones sucking up the oxygen. It's bacteria, microbes. So think of all those, amazing weed beds that we fish in the summer. Many of those, most of those die in the late fall and winter. And so they sit on the bottom, sort of, breaking down, and it's that bacteria or those microbes that slowly break it down, and there's enough of them that they actually start to consume a significant portion of the oxygen and can actually bring the dissolved oxygen levels down to levels that can actually be lethal to fish.
Wow. But as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, you know, I've always been led to believe that the fish, of course, are cold-blooded creatures, and therefore temperatures don't really affect them as they would us. Like, they don't get cold or they don't get hot. But you're saying that that might not be the case?
Well, cold-blooded means that their body temperature is the same as the environment around them. So they not, like, we maintain our body temperature, unless we've got a fever or hypothermic, in a very narrow range. Whereas fish, if the water temperature is 4 degrees, their body temperature is 4 degrees. And I'll give you a really interesting example of what that means. We've measured the heart rate of fish at cold temperatures. And so at 3 or 4 degrees Celsius, a largemouth bass's heart rate is 6 beats per minute. That same fish at 20 degrees is 10 times higher. It's 60 beats per minute. So
wow.
These fish are really chilling out. They're alive, but they're just literally chilling out, just hanging out. Now, not every fish is the same, right? So there's fish that are certainly active. You know, you can look in your fish finder or throw down a camera, and you will see things like yellow perch and walleye and northern pike moving around quite a bit. But if you stumble upon an aggregation of something like bass, you're going to see that they tend to stick to one spot and aren't moving around nearly as much. So not all fish are tuned in the same way to a given temperature.
Now, I recently on the internet, a photograph was being passed around that, it insinuated that this fish, it was a very large bass, was actually sleeping, was down, you know, on the bottom of the lake in the mud, sort of laying his belly right down on the mud and looked like, I mean, it certainly looked like it was lights out. Do they actually hunker down during winter conditions?
Yeah, the fancy word is they become quiescent, which is which sort of means that, you know, again, their metabolic rate slows down, their heart rate slows down, they aren't taking in food. Now, that doesn't mean you can't catch one. You know, if you put, you know, the right bait in front of a bass, you know, and it's feeling in the mood, it might bite it, but it might take that fish a week or two to digest what it's eaten. So, and there's actually a cost to digestion. So for something like bass, we don't think they eat very much at all in the winter. And again, doesn't mean they are catchable, but we don't think they're eating. Eating for the purpose of putting on weight or anything like that. So, bass put on all their mass in the summer and the fall. That's, you know, that's why, you know, they put on the feed bag and, you know, you can come to find the right spot and you can catch, you know, smallmouth bass pig after smallmouth bass pig as they're accumulating that mass, but then they just ride it out. They're sort of on a declining, you know, they're kind of on a diet basically from, you know, November through till the open water season.
Interesting. Stephen, can you sit tight for a minute? I have to take a quick break, but there's at least another half dozen questions I have to ask you.
So, absolutely. Let's do it.
Dr. Stephen Cook on the line with us from Carleton University. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away. Hey, want to learn more about the last great fishing frontier? Then look no further than FishingCanada.com.
Oh, buddy, that's a tank. That's a tank.
The biggest and most comprehensive website dedicated exclusively to, you guessed it, fishing in Canada. Videos, blogs, how-tos, and GPS waypoints to some of Canada's best fishing hotspots and much, much more. We'll even show you how to prepare a world-famous Canadian shore lunch. If you love fishing, then you'll love FishingCanada.com. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola. Over there is Stephen Labadie, along with Andrew Holland, Jessica Ellis, all at your beck and call. This wonderful weekend, I alluded to it earlier in the program, is early spring weekend. That's what it feels like out here. It's insane, man, and telling us to get used to it. A couple of moments ago, on the line with us is Dr. Stephen Cook, professor of environmental science and biology from Carleton University. Is this pretty much it for winters, in your opinion, Stephen?
I think winter in the future is going to be characterized by more variability. So it won't mean that we won't have those big dumps of snow or really cold periods, but it's not going to be like that for very long. So when we used to study winter and design experiments, it'd be low and we just keep it at really cold temperatures for a long time. What we basically do. What we basically do when we study winter now, instead of keeping it just at a standard low temperature, we cycle it up and down. So you'd have, 2 weeks of cold, and then we have a warm spell, and then it would cool down again. And that's what the fish have to get used to dealing with as well, these periods of sort of awakening. As we talked about earlier, whatever their body temperature is the same as the water around them. So if you're used to being at 4 degrees Celsius or 3 degrees Celsius for 3 months, and all of a sudden you have these periods where, the water temperature jumps up by 3 or 4 or 5 degrees, that's going to sort of change how those organisms perform and might require them to actually start feeding during the winter time. So what this means to wreck fishing in the future, I'm not sure, but I know that anglers are creative enough that will adapt.
Yeah, exactly. They will adapt. They may take a little longer than we would like in some cases, but eventually things will definitely be where they should be. What's the latest in your studies? What's the hot topic right now?
Certainly right now we're focused a lot on ice fishing, or trying to do that at this time of year. Some of the questions that we have right now focus on bass, actually. In eastern Ontario there is a season such that bass are closed right now. We've got research permits that allow us to fish for them, and we're asking the question, what are the negative consequences, if any, of catching a bass through the ice in the winter, assuming that it's going to be released. What's cool, I think, is how we're doing it. So it's hard, we can't set up a tank right beside the ice fishing hole. So the way we're assessing how well the fish do is by putting tiny accelerometers on their side with Velcro. So accelerometers are the same thing that are in your telephone or in your fancy wristwatch that count how many steps you take in a day. We put those on the fish, and they tell us how many times they're beating their tail. And so we use that to give us an indication of whether they're dead or alive after they swim away from us. So we're going to be looking at different air exposure periods. Is it better to hold a bass in air or to actually rest it, like in your hands, or to rest it on the ice? In the big scheme of things, we know pretty little about catch and release and ice fishing. There have probably been 300 studies on open water catch and release issues across all sorts of species, whereas for ice fishing, in total, there's less than 10 papers, and most of them focus on walleye, lake trout, and pike. So there's lots of room there, and that's where we're focusing efforts.
We often hear in the spring of the year, once ice out period comes, that you hear these stories about winter kill and bodies, fish bodies floating around on shore and whatnot. What's the mortality level for bass while under the ice? Do they winter well, or is it a fragile fish in normal conditions, all things being equal?
Yeah. It really depends on a given year. And so in Ontario, in small lakes, we tend to see winter kills quite often. Winter kill happens when you get snow penetrate. And when the light's not penetrating, you're not getting any photosynthesis, so the plants aren't producing oxygen, and all you have are those microbes that are eating the decayed vegetation, sucking up the oxygen. So you get really low oxygen, and at some point the fish start dying. The ones that are most sensitive would die first. So if it was a lake that had trout in it, they would die first, and then you'd sort of work your way along to the more sensitive species, or least sensitive species, which would be something like a brown bullhead, which you'd virtually have to have no oxygen in the water before they would die. And so we've had some studies where we've put telemetry tags, we're tracking fish throughout the winter, to see what habitats they use and so on. And there was a period, this is a few years ago, in mid-February, where all of a sudden all the fish stopped moving within a 2 or 3 day period. And this was perplexing, and we checked with, we did some water chemistry and realized, wow, the dissolved oxygen levels are really, really low. And so this happened to be a largemouth bass study, and 95% of the fish that we had tagged died over a 3 or 4 day period. And so what was remarkable, though, is so we went back in the spring, the second the ice came off, and we're like, we want to find these bodies because they've got our tags in them. We want to be able to reuse right. these tags. We want to look at these animals. We could not find a single carcass. So, and wow. there's no reason to think that it wasn't just 95% of our tagged fish. It was 95% of the bass in that lake. We do snorkeling surveys. We fish the crap out of it. We could not get a bass to bite. So, this happens, you know, every 3, 5, 7 years. And is pretty important in structuring fish communities in small lakes. So, yeah, it's remarkable. Presumably those fish end up on the bottom, scavenged by, of course, microbes break them down, but there's other things at play.
You know, I was this past summer talking to a fellow angler. We're out in the water, and an interesting, you know, one of those theories sort of came up, or one of those questions came up that you can't answer. What happens? I mean, there's got to be fish dying of natural causes on any given body of water, like on an hourly basis.
Yep.
You don't see them floating around. You would think you'd see more fish in that environment, but you don't see them.
Yeah, there's a ton of scavengers out there. And then even trying to figure out what happens to not all fish float, some sink.
Right.
It depends on
right.
water temperature and other things. We've actually done I mentioned how we do telemetry studies and follow fish. Usually we're tracking live fish, but we've also done studies where we tag dead fish. We did it in a small stream in Ottawa. We were interested in, you know, what are the scavengers in an urban ecosystem that take away dead fish. And, wow, there's some turtles out there that are absolute eating machines. So our snapping turtles, do an amazing job of finding and consuming, dead fish, muskrats, coyotes, field mice, all sorts of things. Obviously, some of these things need to, you know, the animal needs to wash up on shore, but they do not last long. Even crayfish, a lot of crayfish will chow down on a dead fish.
Wow. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Keep up the great work, Steve. With folks like you and the lab, the Cook Lab at Carleton University, we're able to take what we, you know, see as a pastime, a recreational activity, but get a little more insight into it. And, you know, I dare say that by knowing more about the fish and its habitat, I think we get more out of fishing as a whole. So keep up the good work, my friend.
Really appreciate it. Have a great winter.
You too. Dr. Stephen Cook from Carleton University, doing all kinds of interesting studies. I mean, you know, it's fascinating because I spend my life chasing fish. So to have some answers is great. But even for folks who don't fish, it's got to be interesting to find out about this mysterious little creature under the water that we know very little about still.
It's true.